Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Yiner puts the ball in play again, deep to right field, and he walks it off! Yiner Diaz finishes off! Masterpiece for Framber Valdez with a walk-off home run. A 2-1 victory tonight.
Oh, bartender, make this a good one. I desperately needed that Yiner bomb.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome into the bullpen. That audio, of course, courtesy of Space City Home Network, the Shin, as some here might call it. And the Astros 2-1 win, the walk-off by Yiner Diaz, the dominant performance from Framber Valdez. Thank you to Todd Callis and Jeff Blum for that call. But we will get to that in a second, John Belmer. But I'm here, Brian McDonald. You can find me on Twitter at Side by BMAC. I'm here to start the show. John Belmer behind the glass. You can find him on Twitter at Third Coast Johnny is here to start the show.
I'm here.
What are we missing, Johnny? There's there's an empty chair to my right now. Sometimes in the past, that has obviously been Sean Mapes, but Sean Mapes is only with us about once a month now. Cam Smith not here to start the show. Oh, there's Cam Smith walking through the door. The show we have that welcome to the show cam drop. He's literally walking in during the show. I think we might have to hit that drop.
No, I'm disappointed in myself. I don't have it.
Oh, you don't have it available. That's too bad. Well, Cam just walked into the studio. You're going to see him if you're watching the stream over on YouTube set up live as the show is going on. And we will continue to give him grief for this. Apparently, Johnny, he texted us. I didn't see this in real time because I was editing some audio and finding some like stats and things. But he claims someone ran into the gate at his apartment. That's the claim?
I live in Midtown, so there's a lot of dumbasses.
Okay, well, how many of those dumbasses showed up to work on time?
None, except for me.
Except for you? Oh, well, I don't know, Johnny. Would you call this showing up to work on time?
I would not.
Yeah, I would not. The show started, Cam. The show started. I mean, like, it happens to all of us.
We're going to go downstairs in a few minutes, and there's going to be front bumper damage on Cam's
yeah,
vehicle
Cam,
here.
Cam was the dumbass that ran into the gate.
The hell
apartment.
I was.
All right, welcome into the show, Cam Smith. So we're obviously going to lead off here talking about the Astros 2-1 victory, the walk-off homer by Yiner Diaz. But let's start with the other side of the team there, the pitching. Only needed one pitcher yesterday because Framber Valdez, it's something that hasn't been done since the 90s, and Daryl Kyle went the entire distance for the Astros. 9 innings pitch, only 3 hits allowed, 1 earned run, which was off a homer. Struck out 9, goes 9 complete inning guys on 83 pitches. It's just absurd. Like I think McTaggart at one point, or maybe it was Chandler Rome. I forget. At one point, tweeted out Fromber's like pitches by inning, and he had multiple innings where he was 9 pitches or less to get through an entire inning. Like
that's beautiful.
Obviously, when you're a ground ball pitcher, that has a higher chance of happening than someone that's relying on the strikeouts. Now he's still got 9 of them. But, I mean, just an unbelievable start from Framber Valdez. I mean, I don't even want to call it, like, vintage Framber because it was so far and beyond, his best performance of the season.
I mean, but, like, this is – I feel like – doesn't it feel like all these Astros pitchers, Hader, Framber, McCullers, like, they all have all these amazing performances so far, and it's just been one bad one that's, like –
Well, certainly that's been the case with Lance.
Their ERA.
Yeah, we've done this with Lance, and I'll just give out the number now since we're kind of on the topic. But Lance McCullers had the one blow-up start against Cincinnati where he only got 1 out, gave up 7 earned runs, which balloons his ERA. I think it's now like 6.5. But if you take out that one start against Cincinnati, otherwise he's 18 innings pitched with a 250 ERA.
And I feel like
obviously he's coming off starts of 12 and 8 strikeouts in his last two. He's looked great.
Yeah, and I feel like that's almost – it's weird. Like, I almost feel like Fromber's kind of floated under the radar this year. Like, I feel like there's been so many other, like, little storylines with the Astros that we almost forget that, like, hey, Framber's back to pitching at, like, below 3 ERA. But because of everything else, it's almost just, like,
yeah, not, like, even in the, like, even just in the starting pitching, not even factoring in the, you know, the fielders and hitters. I mean, who's gotten the most headlines out of the starting pitchers this year? It's been Hunter Brown.
It's been
basically
Hunter
Brown. Baseball put out, like, their power index for starting pitchers. Hunter Brown, at least as of, like, a week ago, was the number one pitcher in all of baseball on their ranking. Framber Valdez, to your point, I think has fallen far under the radar.
Which is crazy, but, like, I mean, I'm at fault for this because I said that my initial, I guess, reservation on the Astros being good this year was going to be their starting pitching, and it's been their pitching that has kept these Astros at a 500.
Yeah, I mean, you win 2-1 yesterday. I mean, most of the time you score two runs, you should not win.
No.
John, it looks like you had a thought here. Do you have a thought here on Fromber? It just looked like you're about to jump in.
No. But I will say, you just said, you know, we talked about the starting pitching being, you know, great, and then you said we won 2-1 yesterday. Well, the day before that, they gave up 13 runs.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
a little inconsistent, it's but little I will inconsistent say for sure. it is.
And the day before that, the Astros scored 11 runs.
Yes.
So,
but the pitching has been a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, certainly at the top of your rotation, and then the bullpen, other than what Brian King did on Thursday, has been fantastic. So, Cam, I want to go further down the rabbit hole, something you just mentioned, but before I do that, if you want to give us a call or a text on the HRMP list when I join the conversation here on the Astros, or later we're going to talk about the Texans, give us a call or a text on the HRMP list line, 713-780-3776. Again, you can also find us on Twitter. I'm at SackByBMAT. Cam is at Clutch City Cam, and Johnny is at Third Coast Johnny. So you mentioned, Cam, a minute ago about Fromber kind of flying under the radar. And that was one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about, because I think Fromber, not just this year, but I think for his entire Astros career, I think he's been kind of underrated. Like, I mean, the Chandler Rome and then Jeremy Brandon followed suit. Like, people have been coming out with their Astros first quarter century team, like, yeah, 2000 to 2025. And I don't believe he was on Chandler Rome's team. I know he wasn't on Jeremy Branham's team. And look, the guys on his team, I mean, Verlander, Cole, Roger Clemens, Roy Oswalt, these are elite, elite names. So it's not like any of those guys were undeserving. But Fromber Valdez didn't make his list. And so I was just thinking, like, are we – maybe because we're caught up in the moment, or because he's a ground ball pitcher, which, you know, is not as sexy. Like, are we undervaluing or underrating what Fromber Valdez has been as the Astros' ace these last several years? And so I was curious. Now, Roy Oswalt obviously pitched more for the Astros, about 100, not 100 more. Like, I think Fromber's just below 1,000 career innings. Roy Oswalt pitched, like, just over 2,000 innings as an Astro. So obviously the time frame isn't the same,
yeah,
but just looking at their numbers as Astros, not factoring Roy Oswalt when he was a Philly or a Ranger or Rocky, any of that stuff. But Fromber Valdez, a .619 winning percentage as an Astro. Roy Oswalt, .636. So edge to Roy Oswalt, but not drastically higher. I would say those are both pretty close to each other. Then you go on to the ERA, Fromber Valdez, .329. Roy Oswalt, .324. I mean, very, very close. Again, slight edge to Roy Oswalt, 324 to 329, but we're talking about 0.05. I mean, it's a very, very small margin. The whip, 1.18 for Fromber, 1.19 for Oswalt. I mean, virtually a tie. And then Fromber actually has a better strikeouts per nine at 8.7 compared to Roy Oswalt at 7.4. So, look, Roy Oswalt was my favorite player of that era, in like the 2000 Astros. I thought he was unbelievable. It was must see TV every time he was on.
The pinstripe era.
Yeah. I hated those. I hated those uniforms. I hated Junction Jack, that stupid mascot. But I loved Roy Oswalt, and he was my favorite player. So I think I have a tendency to put him on a pedestal, and I had no problem with obviously Roy Oswalt being on these all first quarter century teams. He deserves to be. But when you look at the numbers, Fromber Valdez is right there with him. I think as a fan base, especially when you compare him to arguably the greatest pitcher in franchise history as far as someone who pitched a long period of time, because Roger Clemens is here for a very short time, Garrett Cole was only here for 2 years, blah, blah, blah. But when you compare him to arguably the greatest pitcher in Astros history, Framber Valdez is right there.
I mean, he has to be. Obviously, it's going to be hard to, like, compare him to, like, J.R. Richards and, like, Nolan
Ryan. Sure, completely different era.
Yeah, obviously, completely different era. But if we're talking about from, like, the 2000s, look, I get that Clemens and Pettit and Cole and Verlander had, like, these amazing seasons. But if you're talking about, like, longevity, I mean, Frommer's been here. I mean, he's been here longer than Clemens was. He's been here longer than Pettit was. He's been here longer than Garrett Cole was. I mean, I guess he's been here.
I think he's probably about equal with Keuchel now. Because Keuchel's like 14 to, I think he left after the 19 season.
Yeah, and Dallas had, he had some up and down years. I mean, there's some great years from him, but there was also some like four ERAs, five ERAs with him. So, I mean, yeah, to your point, after this year, if Frommer can stay doing what he's doing, it's going to be really hard to not, to argue against him not being the best Astros pitcher in terms of like consistency and like longevity.
And he's had some really, like, he hasn't had the regular season high that Dallas Keuchel had or Clemens or Verlander, because those guys won Cy Youngs here. But I mean, he's had
but
some.
But Framber had a Cy Young worthy.
He did, year. Yeah. And he had a no hitter in that in that next season. And what I was going to say, he's also had some of, I mean, he hasn't had the Oswald moment where he went on the road in St. Louis and got himself a bulldozer because he shut down the Cardinals. He hasn't had that moment, but he was the winning pitcher on the mound against the Phillies in Game 6 in 2022.
Yeah.
He was the guy that went into Boston in Game 6 of the ALCS in 2021 to shut down the Red Sox. Like, he's had – now, he's also had some moments that, like he did against the Rangers last year, which was – or 2 years ago. And he wasn't great against the Tigers last year. But so he's had, to your point, like some up and down moments. But his highs, I think, are pretty close to the highs we've seen from some of the other great Astros pitchers.
Yeah, and I also think because of the all the winning that the Astros have done the last, I mean, not 10 years, but 7 to 8 years, I feel like these pitchers are put on a higher pedestal. So we're expecting more of them as opposed to the Oswalt years where, yeah, 2005, they went to like the World Series. But mm-hmm. Other than that, they were pretty trash after
that.
Well,
in 2004, they got to Game 7 in the NLCS.
I feel like we were holding these players at a higher expectation than we did some of these Astros players in the early 2000s, you know, before they went on those that horrific run of 100 losses in a row. So
I think that's a fair point, because the Astros, outside of 04 and 05, we were pretty much kind of like, well, they'll make the playoffs, but that's pretty much it, because the Braves are going to shut us down. Or we're going to lose to the Padres because, why am I forgetting, John Brown? Kevin Brown gets to go twice in a five-game series. I think he actually pitched twice in four games because of the weird scheduling. Like, I think the expectations have certainly been raised, so that you're right. Maybe the standard that we hold like guys like Framber to is not the same as some of what we held past Astros pitchers to. But let's stick with Framber on the other side of the break. You mentioned about his end of year. Well, also end of year. He will be without a contract with the Houston Astros. Would you pay to bring him back? Plus, on the other side of the break, we also have some thoughts on Yordan, who not in the lineup today, but looks like he could be returning really soon. That one, the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5, welcome back into The Bullpen. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Belmer with you here on this Saturday afternoon here in Houston. If you want to join the conversation on Framber Valdez, or we're going to talk about Yordan in a minute, of course, you can get thoughts in on the Texans as well, which we'll get into in a segment or two. Give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So last segment, we were mostly talking about Framber Valdez on the mound last night, which was one of the best starts we've seen in Astros history, especially if you exclude the no-hitters. I mean, you have to go back to, what was it, 1993 with Daryl Kyle, since we've seen a guy throw a nine-inning complete game and 83 pitches or less. I mean, it's just incredible. Incredible stuff here. I mean, hell,
83 pitches is absolute. craziness.
So yeah, I believe it was 1980 or 1993. Which, if that's the case, Sean Mapes was not alive when that happened.
1983.
1993. Yeah, Sean Mapes is not alive. AJ, who's a producer here at the station, also not alive. Like, there are so many people here that work here that weren't even alive the last time when Houston Astros pitcher did this. Just to further illustrate the point of how rare last night's performance was. But going beyond what happened actually on the mound last night for Framber Valdez, Cam, you mentioned, like, by the end of the season, if he keeps doing, not specifically that, because that's obviously rare, but pitching extremely well, where he could put himself as far as, you know, Astros all-time greats as starting pitcher. And obviously the question becomes for Framber Valdez, like, well, he's also without a contract after the season's over. So would you pay what it would take to bring Framber Valdez back? I think the thinking, and speaking for myself, and I think most people have kind of fallen along the same line of thinking. It's like, well, he's probably gone. We've seen it. Obviously, the Astros didn't pay to bring back Keuchel. They didn't pay to bring back Springer or Correa. They traded Tucker away. I think some people expected maybe they would trade Framber Valdez away this offseason as well because of his contract situation, but that didn't happen. So I'm curious what you think the chance is of resigning Framber Valdez. But I was a little taken back by this because I was expecting what after we saw Max Fried get from the Yankees, which was like 8 years, 200 something million, just like something like that. I mean, great left-handed pitcher, but I would take Framber Valdez over Max Fried. Although Max Fried's having a great year, his ERA is below two, I believe. But I was looking it up on SpoTrack this morning. So Framber Valdez market value projection, what they project him to be worth on the open market if he actually is not re-signed by the Astros before the season's over, it was surprisingly low to me. 3 years, $70.7 million, which works out to 23.6 per year, and he's making $18 million this year. So that would be a raise by $5 million, so his contract would go up. But look, if I'm Jim Crane, if I'm the Astros, if I'm Dana Brown, and the cost is 3 years, $70 million to bring back Framber Valdez. I know he's a starting pitcher, so we're worried about injuries. I know he's above 30, so that brings in an extra element of risk. But 3 years, $70 million? There is no way you cannot bring him back if that's the going price.
Absolutely not. I mean, it sucked watching Correa and Springer and all these guys go. But I feel like position players are a little more easy to replace than starting pitching, and we've seen the massive injuries to hit Astros pitching the last couple years.
Oh, I mean, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, yeah. Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy. I mean, Ronel Blanco. I mean, Spencer Arrigetti got randomly hit by a ball during batting practice. I mean, it's, yeah.
The list just goes on and goes on and goes on.
Oh, yeah, there's more names. Yeah. That was not the end of the list.
At some point, you have to just... You have to spend money. And my thing is if you can give McCullers over $100 million with doing less than what Framber,
he didn't get over $100 million, did he? Are you sure about that? Wasn't it
over 100?
No. I don't think so. Like, he's only making like 18 per year, so he'd have to be like a 6 year deal in order. I'm going to make sure I'm not crazy, but I mean, I get your point. Like, you paid him for 2 years to do nothing. So I mean, I get your overall point, yeah. But I don't think he made 100 million.
Well, if
5 years, 85.
5 years, 85. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, my bad. 85 million. That's still more than $70 million. And Framber has done more than McCullers has. So there's really no argument to not pay Framber, because if you do not pay him and we're going into next season with Hunter Brown and...
Don't say Hunter Brown's name like that.
I'm putting all the respect on Hunter Brown. Okay. Hunter Brown is our number one ace. I'm down with that. But if it is Hunter Brown and...
Arrigetti,
and
McCullers,
and all these other names, we are.
Wait, you don't want to see Ryan Gusto back as one of your starters next year? Ryan Gusto
as the fifth, sure.
I don't even know if I want him as a sixth, bro.
Well,
Ryan Gusto,
even more to the point, you have to bring Framber back. I mean, what is the argument to not bring him
back? There's not one. If, exactly. If look, I don't think this SpoTrack market value is projection is going to end up being true.
No.
Like, if I were to guess what Framber Valdez gets, it starts at 4 years, $100 million. And I think that's even that's on the low side. Again, Max Fried got $200
million.
Yeah. So I don't think this gets it done. But if Jim Crane lets Framber Valdez walk out the door over 3 years, $70 million, I'm going to be pissed. Like, that, you, there,
yeah.
Look, I get the business aspect of, look, paying Springer what he got would have been dumb. Paying Correa what he got would have been dumb. I'm fine with that. But 3 years, $70 million for a guy that feels like he's a lock to be a top five-ish Cy Young candidate every year? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And he's a lefty? Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah. No, it would be absurd if he – now, again, I fully recognize that there's almost – I don't know what percentage chance you would put that he actually only gets 3 years, $70 million. I'd say it's like 10%. Again, I think it starts at 4 years, 100. So I don't think this is going to wind up even being a thing that we have to talk about, because they'll get way more than this. But, yeah, I think Jim Crane sometimes has been unfairly labeled as cheap. If he lets Framber Valdez walk over 3 years, $70 million, hypothetically, according to the Spotrac market projection, I would very firmly label him as cheap.
Cheap, and that's just asinine. That is just I don't know.
All right, so let's get to Yordan Alvarez, who, I mean, well, before we get into our thoughts, Joe Espada in the dugout yesterday before the Astros game, which obviously ended in the 2-1 victory for the good guys, was asked about Yordan Alvarez, an update as far as when we could expect him back, what's going on, how the live batting practice went with Yordan Alvarez. Here's what the Astros manager had to say.
You know, I thought today went really well. You know, hit some balls out of the ballpark, hit the ball the other way. He said he felt good. So we'll see where this takes us. But I think this is a step in the right direction.
Was there a chance he could play today? Did he want to play today, or how'd that go?
Oh, he, man, knowing him. But you know what? I told him, like, let's just take it, you know, one step at a time. I think today was a really good day, and we see where we go from here.
Do you just kind of have to wait to see how his hand responds to this before you decide what's next?
Yeah, I think so. I think we want to just give this some time here and see how he feels. But I think today went well.
So just the fact that he was able to hit off pitching today meant that yesterday he woke up, felt good?
Yeah, that's, you know, that was kind of the step, the process. If yesterday went well, move forward today and face some live BPs, and he did, and then we'll see where we go from here.
So that is, again, Astros manager Joe Espada talking about Yordan Alvarez and where his recovery from the mysterious hand injury stands currently. Now, he talked like there was a chance that he could have played yesterday. I don't know how true that was, because he's not in the lineup today. So if it was really close to him playing yesterday, he probably would have been in the lineup today. I guess at this point, they're probably just going to wait to the road trip. And I've always heard that managers sometimes prefer to put guys who have been out for a while as a return on the road, because there's less pressure to immediately, like, step up and perform for the home crowd. Like, they're not pressing as they go back into it. So if I would guess, he's also not in the lineup tomorrow, and then he returns when the road trip starts next week. But I don't know about you guys, but Yordan Alvarez has been out since May 2nd. And we still don't really know what his hand injury was. And look, I'd like to believe that nothing weird is happening, but this is the same franchise who didn't know which hand of Yordan Alvarez was hurt just 3 years ago. This is the same franchise that told us that Kyle Tucker could return 3 days after a bone bruise, which then kept him out for 3 months.
Yep.
I mean, like, this is the same franchise that told us that Christian Javier hurt his neck sleeping on a hotel pillow, and that turned into Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with any information the Astros give us. And Chandler Rome, to his credit, has been more vocal about his displeasure with how the Astros handle things. But when Yordan Alvarez initially got hurt, again, he hasn't played since May 2nd, so we'll pretty much be at a full month. Like, if he returns next week, it'll be a full month, because tomorrow's June 1st. He would not be playing until a month out from his last game. When he first went down, they told us no imaging was required. Oh, it's fine. It's just a minor thing. No imaging is required. We're not worried about, you know, a break. We're not worried about anything structurally damaged. We're not even going to look at it. Even though we have an X-ray room down the hall, Yordan would have to walk 100 feet to get there. we're not going to look at his hand because it's fine. 3 days later, they took an image of his hand. Like, I mean, so clearly whatever minor injury happened wasn't healing to the way that they had hoped. And, of course, we don't get any of this information because the Astros tell us nothing. But it's just weird that they would tell us it's so minor that they're not even going to take imaging when, again, it's they have the technology in their building, and then, yeah, he's out a month.
Yeah.
It's so minor, we're not even going to look at it. He's out 30 days. I just don't know what to do with the Astros right now.
And he's arguably, like, he's the most important
player to your franchise.
Yeah, exactly. The Astros are very frustrating when it comes to talking about injuries, but I almost feel like it even goes further back than some of the names we mentioned. I mean, hell, didn't Hunter Pence walk through a screen door in his bathroom, and they're like, oh, he just got cut. He'll be fine. And then he was out for a couple months, too. Like,
I remember what happened. He was in the hot tub with some chicks, and he tried to go back inside and forgot the door was closed.
I got the door and walked through. Like, yeah, obviously that's not a baseball injury, but even that one was, if I remember correctly, he was supposed to be back shortly because it was supposed to be just a cut. And then he was out weeks and weeks. And I don't know if he was ever actually the same.
Oh, he had a good career.
He had a really good career. But, I mean, he left the Astros like
went to 2006 or 7. Yeah. Well, he went to Philly first.
Damn. I mean, how many?
dump that, Johnny.
My bad. How many players from the Astros go to the Phillies?
No, you can't just move past that, Cam. Cam, who doesn't show up to work on time, just drop a GD on the air and make Johnny had to dump him. I'm not going to let you just walk past that like you just Hunter Pence yourself through the door of radio.
Well, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Well, can I just say how boss it is that Hunter Pence is so jacked? Well, he didn't even seem like he was that jacked, but he just like casually like walks himself through a sliding glass door. Like, I mean, unless this is some janky-ass sliding glass door made by Lego, like, how is he walking, like, in a casual, like, think about it. You're outside in a hot tub, right? You're chilling with the ladies. And you go back inside for whatever reason. Like, you're not sprinting. Like, that's a casually stroll. Like, and he busts through, like, the Kool-Aid man.
He's got some sharp elbows.
I guess. I guess, Johnny.
He did. He was a very funky looking baseball player.
He swung weird. He threw weird. He ran weird. Yeah, he did.
Just an awkward character. But, hey, shout out to Hunter Pence. Great Astros player. Yeah. Poor sliding door.
Yeah, Hunter Pence won. Sliding door won. Yeah. Hunter Pence zero. I don't know. He did break through it, though.
He did.
So I don't know if I want to
shattered it.
I don't know if I want to give the win to the sliding door. He broke through it. Quickly before we go to the break, we got some more Astros stuff, and we'll split it with some Texans talk on the other side of the break. So, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5, a move the Astros should make now when we get back from the break, and CJ Stroud not throwing at OTAs. How concerned are you? That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
This is the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, who shows up to work late, drops potty words on the radio that John Belmer, our hardworking producer, has to drop. You're making John do extra work.
Technically, John I got here paid. Right on time.
Yeah, I had already started talking.
It wasn't on time.
The
show was actually live when you walked in the door.
How do I know y'all didn't start early just to make this a bit?
No, I didn't want to do. I don't want to do radio. I don't want to do radio without someone sitting next to me. No, are you kidding me? No, I was panicking. No, I wasn't panicking. I knew you were a few minutes away, but no, I would not do that. I would not do extra work just to shame you. Okay. Depends on the mood that day. At Talking Astros here, Texans coming up in just a couple minutes. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So I mentioned before the break, a move the Astros should make right now. Now, obviously, when Yordan comes up, I would expect Cesar Salazar to get sent down with the Astros' third catcher. Like, he's only played, I think, once since they called him up, and that was as a starting pitcher or as a relief pitcher a couple of nights ago. That's which, crazy. To his credit, Brian King gave up 5 runs. Cesar Salazar, your third catcher, threw a scoreless inning. So, I don't know.
Maybe, Cy Young candidate.
Maybe keep him up as a bullpen arm. I don't know. I'm just an idiot on the radio talking nonsense. But he was perfect the other night. But another move I think the Astros should make, unrelated to the Yordan return and that corresponding move that will go along with it, it's time to end the experiment with Brendan Rodgers. I know his salary is now locked in for the season, so you'd have to eat the remaining money of that $2 million contract the Astros gave him, and that sucks. But I mean, he's just been abysmal. He's unplayable. Yeah. Like right now, Brendan Rodgers hitting 194 with a 52 OPS plus. If you don't know what OPS plus is, it basically takes your OPS and averages it out to the rest of the league. So 100 is dead average, and he's at a 52, so like half of average. Just by comparison, Martin Maldonado, right, one of the worst hitters we've ever seen. Statistically, he's like the fourth worst hitter of all time by batting average. No joke. That's actually legit. And Brendan Rodgers has been worse than that. Okay, so I pulled it up because Maldi's had 2 stints with the Astros. His last stint, the 4 years from 2020 to 2023, Martin Maldonado had a 68 OPS plus over those 4 years. 68 again. Brendan Rodgers, 52. He is that much worse than Martin Maldonado. I don't care if you have to eat the 1.1 million or 1.3 million or whatever that's left on his contract. Just like Jose Abreu was last year. I mean, look, I get it sucks that you're eating contract, you're paying money for a guy that's not even on the roster, but he's a detriment to your ball club by being on the team. So just get him off the roster. If you're willing to eat Jose Abreu in the he had like 40 plus million left on his contract at that point. I mean, you only paid Brendan Rodgers $2 million, obviously, during 2 months into the season. So I don't see why they wouldn't eat that contract and just move on.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Thank you, John.
At least to Maldi, at least he was a good catcher. Like, the pitchers loved him. Like,
and Brendan Rodgers isn't terrible defensively, but Dubon's better.
Yeah.
So,
like, we knew Maldi wasn't going to be a hitting catcher, but at least he was doing other things to provide value to the team. Brendan Rodgers, sorry, this is not Colorado. Like, I think we, and I mean, I'm at fault for this too, where I was a little excited when we signed him because I knew what he did in Colorado. But Colorado hitting at that stadium, it's different than any other.
Oh, I mean,
hitting
yeah.
anywhere else.
Like, well, I mean, his home road splits while he was in Colorado, I mean, it was just night and day. Like, he was a 300 batting average wise, 300 career hitter at home, dropped to 225 on the road. Yeah. OPS dropped from 811 at home to 622 on the road. I mean, he's just like you said, he's a guy that could never hit outside of Colorado. I didn't mind the Astros, you know, throwing a dart up against the board, seeing if he figures something out. But he hasn't, and you can't play him, so why is he on the roster? Especially since, and look, I don't expect this guy to come up and push for any sort of end-of-season awards or anything, but Shea Whitcomb down at AAA is absolutely killing it. And it's not the first year he's done this. Right now, he has he leads the PCL, the league the Sugarland Space Cowboys are in, with 18 home runs already. I mean,
crazy.
And they started, I think, 1 or 2 weeks after the Astros.
2 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks after the Astros. And so 18 home runs already. I mean, it's a crazy pace. And again, not the first time he did this. He had 23 in 2021. He had 35 combined in 2023. And then last year, even though he only spent part of the season in AAA because he was up with the Astros for a short stint, he had 25 in that partial season in 2024. So the dude has... Look, I don't think he's going to come up and kill it because he didn't last year, but he provides you so much more possible upside. Because Brendan Rodgers, what is his upside? Absolutely nothing.
Nothing at
this point. There's zero, less than zero, negative upside to Brendan Rodgers. Whatever upside you think Shea Whitcomb has, even if that number is small, there's still possible upside because of his power. And he's a guy that can play not only second like Brendan Rodgers, but he can play first and third. So you have that one roster spot with the position or the position flexibility to cover three defensive spots,
yeah.
Whereas Brendan Rodgers can only play second. So, I mean, Brendan Rodgers is terrible. Wick Holmes is crushing the ball. Andy provides you more defensive flexibility. I see this as a no-brainer. Call up Shea Whitcomb.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't really feel like there's an argument to not bring up Whitcomb, especially since he can play multiple positions. We've seen Christian Walker struggle this year at first base. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he can play first base and he can also play second base, where you're getting probably your least amount of offense from right. Well, no, not probably. You are getting your least amount of offense at second
from
base.
From any position.
I mean, what's the point of keeping him down there?
I mean, what? I don't know. I mean, yeah. I think it might just be literally not wanting to admit fault and have egg on the face from letting Brendan Rodgers get past that deadline where you would owe him the rest of his contract. So I mean, maybe it sounds silly, but it could just be Dana Brown not wanting to go to Jim Crane's. Like, yeah, I know I signed off on keeping Brendan Rodgers and locking this into the rest of his contract, but 2 weeks later, I want to get rid of him. It might literally just be that.
But it's a bigger egg in your face if you keep him on the team and he keeps being trashed.
Like, I agree.
But it's about winning. Like, not, I mean, at the end of the day, you have to put your ego aside. And you see all these other teams making moves and doing things that they need to do to keep winning. I mean, we've already seen all these players, like, leave the Astros, and they're still in the winning window. So at this point, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, and like you said, what if you cut him? You 1 point.
I'm not going to try to do the live math, yeah. But it was a $2 million contract. You're not quite to the halfway part, so let's call it 1.25.
And that's chump change in baseball. That's chump change in baseball.
Like, yeah, you're still paying Montero and Jose Abreu way more than that.
And if you can get rid of those guys, you can get rid of Brendan Rodgers, who is basically going to be a 1 year rental player.
Yeah, that's all he was ever designed to be. They're taking a swing. I co-signed the swing. I mean, you didn't have really anything to lose, but we're at the point of, okay, now let's go ahead and prove that. You didn't have anything to lose. You took the shot. It didn't work. Now it's time to move on. Not really time here in this segment to get into Stroud, so I just want to mention one quick thing, because it feels like, and look, I'm guilty of this, really. I think the only person at the station I heard that wasn't guilty of this at some point this season was Joel Blank. So shout out to Joel. I don't think his confidence never really wavered. But Jeremy Branham at one point was pretty much kind of not saying that it was 100% certainty, but definitely mixing in that there was a strong possibility that this was just a mid team this year. John Granato at one point called of the Astros them entering their Carlos Lee era. I don't remember exactly what I said, but something similar. Like, I didn't think they were going to rebound. Like, I thought this team was just kind of mid. But, I mean, Will Kunkel from Fox put this out on Twitter. So May 31st last year, May 31st this year. This year, the Astros 31-26 and alone in first place in the AL West, which shout out to AL West, because that would not be the same in the Central or the AL East. Both, they'd be back 5-plus in both of those divisions. But first place alone at 31-26 with a run differential of plus 27 this same time last year. 25-33, 6.5 games back with a -9 run differential. So, I mean, look, I don't know where you're – well, I'll go ahead and ask the question. Like, I know last year and for part of this year, I think some Astros fans have started to suffer some lessening of their confidence that they'd had, you know, compared to previous years of this golden era. But where's your confidence level right now that they will finish the season and make the playoffs?
I mean,
if 10 is no doubt in your mind, 1 is obviously the opposite. Where would you put it?
That they make the playoffs?
Yeah, that they make the playoffs.
8-9. I mean, to me, they're still
I think that's right. Yeah.
I still think that they're a mid team, but they're also not fully healthy. So,
right. You get Jordan back. You get Arrigetti back.
And they were healthier last year at this time than they are this year, and they're doing better. So I have pretty much all the confidence that they'll make the playoffs. I don't think that they're the caliber to win the World Series.
What about win the AL? Make the World Series.
Because
I agree with you. Win the World Series, like, I think the Dodgers would boat race them. But, like, do you think they could win the AL? Tigers and Yankees obviously have a they're like 5.5 and 6.5 games up on the Astros at this point. But how do you think? I mean, the Tigers obviously swept you on the road last year, in the wild card round. But
I mean, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I don't think they'll win the AL, but I think with the team that we have, them just getting to that AL position is impressive. Like I know I don't want to be like that type of person where it's like, oh, you make the playoffs, it's a win. But I think this year, considering things, I think if you do make the playoffs and you at least get to the division, then
you got to win the wild card series. Then, this round. I mean, I would agree.
Oh yeah, losing the wild card, no.
Yeah, but you can't get knocked out 2-0, 2 and out in the wild card series again. Like that can't happen. But if they were to make, definitely if they made the ALCS, let's say they make the ALCS and lose to the Yankees in 7, I would consider that a very successful season. But I mean, I'm with you on their likelihood to make the playoffs. I would probably put like an 8.5, 9. The only thing kind of holding me back, and we've talked about it, I get several times in a non-direct way, but the depth of the starting pitching right now is pretty suspect. Yeah. Like you're relying on Lance McCullers of all people, which is a crazy thing to say in 2025. But you're relying on Lance McCullers right now, and probably at least for the next month after this, to be your number three starter until Arrigetti gets back. Because Arrigetti's not coming back before July. I would fully guarantee that. Like, he hasn't started, you know, like, I mean, he's taken off the soft cast and played catch, but he's a long ways from actually stepping on a mound in a regular season game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think they're okay right now. Now they're back in. Like, Ryan Gusto is ass. Like, he's not good. The numbers bear that out. But I think they can get by with what they have right now, since the offense is not only getting healthier, but guys like Altuve and Christian Walker seemingly are starting to turn it around. But they're like one more starting pitcher injury away from complete disaster. That's kind of what my feeling is right now. Like, if they don't make the playoffs,
I'm with you on that.
That's why. It's going to be because they had another starting pitcher injury and they just couldn't sustain anymore. All right. As promised, we will get to C.J. Stroud on the other side of the break, not throwing at Texans OTAs. How concerned are we that when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Houston's only FM sports stations, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. Next hour, of course, we will have Mount Rushmore Plus One. Plus, in our leftover segment, we're going to have some fun with the war between Pat McAfee and John Cougar Mellencamp. I didn't think I'd be saying that sentence in 2025. But first, Johnny, you saw a question for us from Twitter from probably our most loyal listener, Not Santa. What did Not Santa want to know?
Yeah. Not Santa on X. I also call it Twitter way too much.
Yeah, I know. Whatever.
Asked, which return happens first? Yordan returning to the Astros or Sean Mapes returning to the bullpen?
Yordan.
Yeah. I mean, it's you ready for this baseball terminology? It's a home run that it'll be Yordan Alvarez. No? Crickets?
I'll give it a 4 out of 10.
That's fair. That was pretty bad by me.
Yordan. No, actually, no. Heck, I'll say Yordan coming back and hitting a home run before Sean will be
back. I don't think Sean's next show with us. Actually, it could be next week. Yeah,
what a scrub, Sean.
No, wait, no, this is the last, this is the last, because he's going to be doing the last show, okay, fully pulling back the curtain, he's going to do the last show of each month, that's the plan.
Sean should have been here today.
Yeah, he should have been.
Yeah, Sean's like the Astros injury report. We think he's coming back.
He's got this discomfort getting delayed.
Yeah.
He's Kyle Tucker. Oh, he's coming back in 3 days.
He's got couchinitis.
Yeah, No, he's probably playing college football 25 right now, which, I mean, to be fair, I kind of want to be playing college football 25 right now.
With BYU?
But I would guess the next time you hear Sean on this show will be the last episode of June. So yeah, I would say Yordan in a landslide.
Yeah, I'll put 1,000 on that.
You put 1,000 on
it. Oh, hang on.
Okay.
Monopoly money.
Ah, okay.
Oh, are you thinking about placing the bet, Johnny? Are you thinking of taking that action?
No, but I was, you know, I was curious if anybody else was going to take that action.
Well, now I'm nervous because now if it's an actual bet, Sean's be like, oh, hell no, I'm coming next week.
Oh, he's going to cook the numbers?
Yeah.
I already texted him. We're splitting it, you know?
Oh, okay. All right. I see the scheming and the planning going on here. All right. So let's talk about CJ Stroud. That is, I think, unfortunately for this part of the calendar, that it constitutes as news right now because there's nothing going on in the NFL. The draft is done. Most of the first round picks are signed. And we're not actually getting to real practice. They don't even have their pads on. It's just, you know, the jerseys and the helmets. So, but, you know, got to have something to talk about on May 31st. So we're talking about CJ Stroud not throwing. So the weird part about it was initially they seemed to go kind of full Astros on us, where they weren't willing to tell us what was going on, just that, well, you know, he's on his own schedule. What the hell does that mean? Like, okay, he's on his own schedule, but is he on his own schedule because something's going on and that's delaying his schedule? But they weren't going to tell us. But now from Aaron Wilson, and his reporting on this has changed. Like, the initial tweet said it was a pec injury. Now they're saying it's a shoulder injury. But from Aaron Wilson of KPRC2, Stroud not throwing due to tight shoulder muscle, not considered serious, quote, no concerns whatsoever from his source. So I guess 1 to 10, Cam and Johnny, weigh in. How concerned are you about CJ Stroud, 10 being your flipping out?
1.
1, okay.
It's May.
It is literally May. For one more day,
I do not care.
See, I can't look. I am with you that I'm below a 5, right? Like, I think my overall prevailing thought on this is far too early to get concerned about anything. Because even if he is dealing with something, and clearly he's dealing with something, we don't know the severity of it, although Aaron Wilson tells us it's not considered worrisome. But he's dealing with something to the point of he's not going to throw. Because if everything was 100%, he'd be throwing. So we have to start from the point of something is at least slightly wrong. But if it is indeed only slightly wrong, he's got all of June, all of July, into September before he's playing in a regular season game. So even if, look, he's obviously got something going on, whether it be the pec, whether it be the shoulder, whatever it is. But if it is indeed minor, then I think there's plenty of times where he recovers from whatever it is and there is no concern. Here's where I do have some concern, though, and why I wouldn't go as low as you did at a 1. I would probably put it like a 3, and maybe that's too panicky, but that's kind of where I'm at, is we saw him in the Ravens game on Christmas Day, that bludgeoning that the Ravens gave the Texans. I forget who hit him, but he got tackled in a way where he fell on his shoulder, and you could tell he was dealing with something the rest of the game. And he had a comment a little bit after that. I forget before what game. It was like mean availability between games where he talked about dealing with some things and then he kind of doubled back later. It's like, oh, no, I didn't really mean that. I'm fine. And then remember how the playoff game ended? It was his lower body, not his upper body. But one of the last 2 or 3 plays of the game, he gets hit and he was limping big time. And we never really heard a follow-up on that. Was it, at least I didn't. Was it his knee? Was it his ankle? How severe was it? So I think this could be, maybe it's something is minor as the Texans just don't want him to do much right now, because last season, the amount of sacks he took, he was pressured at a rate that was higher than Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. And we saw how much the Eagles pass rush destroyed the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. CJ Stroud faced pressure worse than that every single game of the year. So maybe this is something as simple as last year he got his ass kicked. So Stroud, come in, take it easy for the first few weeks. We'll see you in the end of July for training camp. That's kind of where I'm leaning right now.
I feel like if it was more of a concern, we would have heard about it. But
I don't know if the text, because they're not mandated. They're not, see, I hear what you're saying, but they're not mandated to tell you anything right now. They're not until the regular season.
Yeah, they're not. But I still feel like somehow it would be leaked.
It would get leaked
because I feel like the NFL does that more than baseball. Like, I feel like NBA and NFL, like, a lot more stuff when it comes to, like, injuries and, like, off-court things get leaked more than baseball.
Right.
So that's why I don't have really – if it was, like, August, then my concern level would be higher than a 5. But the fact that it is May 31st and he hasn't thrown yet, like, it just – I'm not ready at all to get close to panicking with him.
No, yeah, I certainly think it's too quick to panic. It's just one of those things kind of
– and then
it's just something to watch. Yeah, like, okay, it's not a big deal now. My question is, one, how severe is it? We don't know. We're not going to get the answer on that. And two, like, when does it become something that we're concerned about? Like, to me, if they open training camp, which will be late July, I don't know the exact date. I don't care enough to look that up. But if they open training camp, let's call it July 27th, and he's not throwing, I'm going to be a little concerned.
Then I'll be concerned. Yeah. But that is almost two months away. And we see this in the NFL where veteran players, star players, sometimes they don't always go out there for stuff like that. And there was the same thing with the Joe Mixon concern last year when he wasn't practicing. And then what happened? Start of the season, he was
unbelievable. 100% ready to go. Until he kept getting horse collar tackled.
Yeah, exactly. So it – just whatever. Let Davis Mills get his reps in. Let Graham Mertz get his reps in.
Oh, God. Don't say. There was another name that popped up that I had never even heard
Keaton
of.
Keaton Slovis.
Yes.
Let him get his reps
in.
Johnny,
on my Quick Start my Quick Start 2 page, there's a Conor McGregor. Who the is that guy? That is who. Say that name one more time. Who was that? Who was that fourth quarterback you talked about?
Hey, mate, who's Keaton Slovis?
Oh, it's okay. That's okay. I
know what you're talking about with the Conor McGregor. That was the Draymond Green back and forth where he walked into
Draymond Green. Draymond Green.
Oh, I'm talking about the Draymond Green thing where Conor McGregor wore a Warriors jersey a couple years ago and Draymond Green put it on his Instagram and was like, "Hey man, we're not rocking with you. We're rocking with Mayweather." And Conor commented back and was like, "Hey man, this is a CJ Watson jersey. Who are you?" to Draymond Green.
No, like, no. The quote was from like some dude at a presser for a fight. But yeah, I remember because apparently that guy threw a touchdown pass to Jaden Higgins in their 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 drills, and I saw the name. It was like something Slovis. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I literally had the Conor McGregor quote of "Who the is that guy?" like running through my head.
I have no idea.
I have never heard it. Look, I consider myself a pretty diehard football fan. I watch the NFL. I watch college football. I obsess over fantasy football. I know names that I shouldn't know. I have no idea who the Slovis guy was.
He's from BYU.
Okay, was he the starting quarterback this last year?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Who the f*** is that guy?
There it is. Yeah. Who the f*** is that guy? Yeah.
I would have thought that was like a Swedish chef or something. If I didn't have my computer in front of me, I would just been like,
one more time. What was his name, Kim?
Keaton Slovis.
Oh, my God.
He went to USC, Pitt, and BYU.
Okay, so he's the Ryan Fitzpatrick of college football. He's just journeying himself all around the sport.
I do apologize. I think he was a starter for BYU last year.
Was he?
Eight games, 1,700 yards, 12 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions.
Yeah. Okay.
Why he's the
I stand by the Conor McGregor cut. Those are not impressive numbers. All right. On the other side of the break, we got to get out. We're it's already 1 o'clock here. Johnny's going to get mad at us. We'll talk a little more Texans and some NFL as well, including some little minor news and notes from OTA, because no news can be major unless there's a seasoning injury at OTAs. But there are some things going on with the offensive line and some of the performances from guys you know, like Will Anderson and Kamari Lassiter. We'll talk about the other side of the break. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.